Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. It's Inside F1 with Uncle Joe, but before we get into that, I just want to do a little bit of admin. Do you want more Missed Apex content? Of course you do. If you're into MotoGP, check out Missed Apex MotoGP, headed up by Kyle Power. They've just done their Qatar race review. And if you're into Formula E, be sure to subscribe to Missed Apex Formula E, headed up by Christina and Chris Stevens. And of course, they'll be doing their race review this Saturday. And if you want more spanners, of course you do. I would love you to look in the show notes below and check out the new podcast I've done with Simon Dan, where we deal with your workplace confessionals. We started on some strong ones. A lot of you sent me stories that were crimes, but that didn't stop me from reading it. So ask your smart speaker to play Final Written Warning or click the link in the show notes below. But today, I bring you the Grand Master of the F1 paddock from a time when drivers who wore the optional leather helmets were considered to be weaker than the sunlight of a British winter, a time when downforce was simply a gimmick for teams that couldn't build decent engines. It's Joe Sayward. Hello, Joe.
Hello. I'm not sure I'm that old, but there we are.
I was just trying to think of long time ago things, and that's what I came up with.
That's long before my birth, I think, most of it, but there you are.
Okay, fair enough.
I have been around a long time, yes.
Yeah, and you've been around a long time and known all the personalities in the background, and honestly feels like you're the journalist that has the most insight on these political movements. It's like you're really fingers deep in the pie, and I think you appreciate the intrigue that F1 fan has with all this drama going on in the background. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I fully understand it. I don't necessarily understand some of the wilder members of society and social media, but there you are. My view is that one protects people a little bit and not just condemns left, right and centre. Anyway, there we are. What's done is done. What's happening now, I suppose, is the first question. The answer is, well, to understand the problem, you need to understand one important thing, and that is that Red Bull is not one organization anymore.
Yeah.
Red Bull is at least two and maybe more. But
the warring factions are crazy in Red Bull. And we can't trust any official statements because we don't know which camp, which side it's coming out from.
I don't know if you can't trust them, but you just don't know which side it's coming from. So, if there's an investigation going on, at Red Bull, you don't know which side is investigating. But what the important point is that Christian Horner is supported by Chalerm. I always get his name wrong. It's really difficult to say. The Thai bloke.
Fair enough.
And that means because the Thai has 51% of the shareholdings in Red Bull, and therefore he has the power. And he supports Christian, therefore Christian cannot be kicked out by the intermediate body between the two of them, which is Red Bull GmbH in Austria, where Mark Mateschitz, the son of, or the heir of Dietrich Mateschitz, has 49%. And then there's the management in Austria, who seem to be the ones who are trying to get rid of Christian, but Christian is protected. So you have three levels, and the top level is supporting the bottom level, and the middle level is out of sync. And I think that it's fair to say that the middle level has, well, they've gone openly and said it. Helmut Marko is part of the middle level, as is Jos Verstappen, and Max Verstappen most recently has got off the fence and basically screwed the pitch for himself, because I can't see how him and Christian Horner can go on. They might make it to the end of this year, but I can't see how they'll go on in the long term, because the trust is gone.
But why is Jos Verstappen involved?
Jos Verstappen's involved for a number of reasons. One is that he is the father of Max Verstappen. Two is that he knows some members of the team quite well.
Like which members of the team, Joe?
Well, he's mixed up in it all. Let's just say that, shall we?
Okay, I think that's actually as far as we can go on that one. Right, okay, so I see the implication. So it's all very interpersonal. It's definitely down to the characters. But it just seems so odd.
Can I leap in here and just say, it's actually, I don't think it's got anything to do with the interpersonal relationships within the team. I think that is the excuse that's being used, because, and I believe this to be true, Christian Horner and the tie are considering taking Red Bull Racing and all the other elements therein, i.e. Red Bull Technology Group, which includes the engine and the supercar company, which is now building this fancy RB17 thing, out of the Red Bull Group, because they have the power to. Mr. Juvija can go to the board at Red Bull and say, I've decided to take the technology company out of Red Bull, and I'll pay you a dollar for it. And then he would say, and you owe me 51 cents.
Because he's the 51%
Because he's the man in control, so he can do what he likes.
So hang on, how realistic is that, and what would it actually look like if they did that?
Well, it would be an independent operation, separate from Red Bull. He has the perfect right to do that. They may not like it, but they can't stop him. And there used to be agreements when Dietrich Mateschitz was alive. He had the management control of the company, but that deal, I believe, died with him. So the people... Basically, as long as Dietrich was alive, the Thais had 51% all the way through, but he had management control. And basically, that was respected. Once he was gone, then they can do what they like with it. And they didn't necessarily... And obviously, Horner didn't want a bunch of Austrians or Germanic people, let's just say, because there's Germans and Austrians together, telling him how to run his racing team, because, you know, that... The team is successful because he ran it. Now, he ran it with money from Mateschitz, yes, and he ran it with a little bit of help from from Marco, finding drivers and all the rest of it. Sometimes it wasn't a help because he and Marco would get into fights over things. But fundamentally, Marco was the eyes and ears of Dietrich, and Dietrich was the money. But Christian made it happen. So in lots of ways, you can say it was Team Horner with a Red Bull badge slapped on it. And I think that's the way Christian looks at it. That he obviously appreciates that it was all paid for by somebody else, but he made it happen. And Adrian Newey was there because of Christian. Renault deal was there because of Christian. You know, all these things that happened that made it successful, apart from some of the driver dealings, which were Marco's side of it. And so everybody feels that they are being put upon, and everyone thinks the others are disloyal. And then it's a matter of which side you're on. And to be honest, I was absolutely astonished when Jos got up and said that Christian should go. After that, Max didn't have a lot of choices, because Max had to either agree with his father or disagree with his father. And that's a pretty hard situation to be in. And you can't just sit there and say nothing. And there was a suggestion that Marco would get moved out. And then Max came and stood up in Jeddah and said, well, you know, if that's going to happen, I'm not sure I'm going to stay here. And it's a mess. Now, the upside of this, obviously, everyone else is, all the other team principals going, yippee, they're killing themselves. And so Toto's been saying, well, you're always welcome here, Helmut, you know, and you're always welcome here, Jos, and you're always welcome here, Max. And oddly enough, Mercedes has a seat available for next year. And so there's a certain amount of discussion going on about whether this is a good idea. I mean, obviously, if the trust is gone between the Verstappen family and Horner, why would he continue there? But it is a most extraordinary thing because you're effectively giving away the chance to win two world championships.
Whoa,
2025 and 2024 are effectively world championships that Red Bull has got to lose.
Yeah. Why are we talking about losing 24? That's this season.
Well, because if Max Verstappen walked out next week.
No part of my head can get around that they would walk out mid-season of a championship.
No, nor can mine, but it could happen. If the trust is broken, how are they going to get to the end of the season? It's going to be very uncomfortable, isn't it?
Hugely. I genuinely can't believe it. You're right. You could see it disappearing until the Jos Verstappen input to it all. And that forced the statement came out from the Thai side and Horner. They started saying that this is how you can tell which team is which. They started using the same phrasing that, oh, well, you know, we wouldn't interfere with someone leaving. No one's bigger than the team. I think he meant no one but me. Is bigger than the team when he said that. The language shifted
but
significantly.
Look, the Thai is looking at things. He's the guy with the power. He's looking at what is best for me. What is best for me is that you don't blow the whole thing up. So the best thing for me is to stick with Horner because that is a great thing. Now, does the Thai care about selling drinks? Does the guy care about cars? I don't know, because it's not his company. You know, it was his dad's. And this is the other element. I don't know the Thai to talk to, so I don't know if he's passionate. I don't get any sign that he's passionate about selling drinks in the way that Mateschitz was. You know, it's just when you've inherited the best part of 30 billion, you know, it's quite hard to have any sort of motivations, really, because you don't need to do anything ever, do you? And Mark Mateschitz is a little bit the same. He actually made the decision to opt out of any kind of management at Red Bull, which is interesting. So he's not trying to be his father, which is probably a wise thing to do because his father was an extraordinary man, and you don't want to be the son who blew it all up. You don't want to. Nobody wants to be. What was the name of Oliver Cromwell's son in England, Richard, Tumbledown Dick.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Daddy handed it over to him and it all fell apart in 10 minutes, you know. So nobody wants to have that disaster happening. So if you stand back, but now the disaster's happening for different reasons. So I don't know where it'll end, but what I do know is that Max, in theory, could go off and join Toto, which is a self-defeating thing in the short term, but it might work in 26 onwards. But then again, if it was going to work in 26, why did Lewis leave?
Lewis.
You see, the thing is that they're all guessing about what's going to happen in 26. Nobody knows. And so we've had people jumping because that might be. I mean, the logic is the biggest car manufacturer should have the most clever people and the budget and the machinery and everything to do the best job building engines. So in logical terms, Alpine should be the place to go because that's the biggest car manufacturer. In Formula One. So that's not right, is it?
Let's delay the Alpine misery.
There's Ferrari. There is the Red Bull powertrains, which is a really impressive place, by the way. I have been around it. And they seem to have all the right stuff. And every time I went around the corner, there's somebody from Mercedes or Ferrari there. You know, the place is packed full of Mercedes and Ferrari people. And so they know what they're doing. And then we have Honda. We don't really know what Honda is, the Aston Martin Honda, that well-known combination, funded by Aramco.
Yes,
and then we have a potential for a world championship winning seat available. Now, in Formula One, if you make a world championship winning seat available, there is mayhem because every driver can see, oh my God, I could win a world championship if I can get in there, at which point all contracts go out the window, everything's set fire to. And, you know, it's just a matter of who can convince whom to do what. So, you know, for example, Fernando Alonso has spent his entire career trying to win more than two world championships, and he deserves to have won more on talent alone.
Yeah.
But he's always been in the wrong place at the wrong time. Well, right now, if he got into a Red Bull for the last couple of years of his career, that would be really good, wouldn't it?
He's going to win.
So he's going to go, whoops, I'm out of here. And you look at Alex Albon, Red Bull driver, driving around in the Williams. If you could have Max's seat, he could have a world championship, couldn't he? Carlos Sainz on the market. He was a Red Bull driver too.
But I'm going to say something that's true and you're going to tell me it's not true. But that car has been built and developed around Max Verstappen and his particular driving style.
Maybe. But how do you know that somebody else can't? I mean, Perez is not... I know you're a Perez fan and all the rest of it, and an apologist for Perez. It doesn't mean that other drivers can't do a better job than Sergio Perez.
Yes, agreed. Agreed that.
And it may well be that, you see, you can say that Max Verstappen is a god and all the rest of this stuff, but is it actually going to work when he transfers, if he transfers, from Red Bull to Mercedes? Will that swing the balance towards Mercedes, or will it actually not? We don't know.
Well, I think like not, but there are genuinely people who deify the drivers to the extent that they think that Verstappen would have won last year's championship in a different car. Yeah, and that the Red Bull success is down to them. No, I don't agree with that either. No. So, you know, it's clearly sort of 80-20, more in that region. But I'm just so surprised that the Verstappens are overplaying their hand, because, like, clearly the car is more important.
Maybe they think that. Maybe they think that they have got, you know, they've got the golden goose who can do anything. Icarus, who can fly near the sun with his wax wings. Who knows what they think? But the fact is that sometimes people are delusional, hence Mr. Icarus, and sometimes they come crashing down as a result. I don't know the answer any more than you know the answer. But what I do know is it's a horrible mess that didn't need necessarily to get to this level. But there's obviously a level of human distaste on various different levels, but it's not simple, and it's not a story that's easy to define in black and white. There are so many shades of grey. The only thing missing from this story is...
That's from a completely different FICA, yeah. FIA.
At which point we can just whiz on to the FIA, I suppose.
I have more questions here. So it's just so odd to me that respected journalists now, these were wild conspiracy theories and it was crazy talk a few weeks ago, but now the likes of yourself, John Noble, Autosport, everyone is kind of talking as if it's really, really possible that Verstappen's leaving. So to the point where they're talking about his options. Like, there's a lot of time column inch is going towards the options. And I just can't believe I find myself here asking about, okay, if he moves, but if he moves to Mercedes, if he takes Marco with him, as Toto Wolff said, like, they surely, the two of them together, Verstappen and Helmut Marko, not to mention the people who would follow them eventually, long term, that would be a massive advantage to Mercedes.
Who would follow them?
Oh, just, you know what people are like. They're like, they follow the cool kids.
Most people aren't like that, actually. It's all this endless talk, like Pierre Wache. He's going to go off to Ferrari. Well, I go and talk to Pierre from time to time, and I say, have you signed for Ferrari yet? And he goes, no. Are you going to? No. And then you read the papers the next day and he's off to Ferrari again.
Who was this?
You know.
Who was this? Pierre Wache?
Yeah.
Who's he?
The technical director of Red Bull.
Ah, right.
The guy who makes it happen.
That would be
Adrian gets all the glory. and sometimes it is Adrian who's doing it. But there's a whole team of people and Pierre is very important in the whole process. And as is Enrico Balbo, the chief aerodynamicist. These are guys who are very important. It's a team, as Max often says, it's a team. So the fact that he thinks he might be able to sort of walk off with the whole team is probably not very likely, because it's Christian's team.
Okay.
You know, so and it's a bit like people, why would people who have their kids in school have a nice big house? They have a drive to work that is 15 minutes long. They have endless adulation and no criticism in the press. Why would you go to Ferrari if you have all that? You know, Ferrari is just like a huge grinding device that kills people.
They've changed. They've changed under Fred. They're nice Ferrari now. They are. They're nice Ferrari.
It's just a load of old tosh. It's still the same old Ferrari. They just haven't been put under pressure yet because everyone assumes they're going to fail. So it's just a natural progression. Oh, it is. After 16 years, what do you want? I mean, you know, in the last... whatever it is. I mean, they're, this year they beat their record for the worst run in the history of Ferrari. Prior to that, it was 83 through to 99, 15 years. This is the 16th year when they will not win a championship. And I think I can guarantee, unless Red Bull does catch fire, and the factory burns down and the cars all get minced up or whatever, I can't see Ferrari winning the world championship. And even if that does happen, Mercedes will probably beat them anyway.
I disagree. Okay, so in this scenario, Verstappen's gone, right?
Yeah.
There's a Verstappen-shaped hole and a car that isn't necessarily suited to other drivers on the grid. So say the only person they can get to drop in their last minute, like mid-season.
Is everybody.
Mid-season? Mid-season, though?
Listen, if a seat like that comes up, grandmothers everywhere will be slain as the drivers climb over anything to get into a winning car. You've got to understand, if you have a chance to win a title, no contract's worth anything.
Hamilton.
Yeah, but in his case, he's already jumped, so he's going to have to break two contracts, isn't he?
Yeah, okay. But like you said, that just means you have to kill two grandmothers. He's just got to double up on grandmothers.
Well, nowadays with divorced families, there's lots of grannies about, aren't there? So multiple grannies to be slaughtered. Anyway, the point is that it is brutal. If the best car becomes available, the battle to get it will be brutal. Do I think it will happen mid-season? No. Could it happen mid-season? I don't know. We'll just have to see how they all get on. If I were Max Verstappen, I'd ask my dad to stay home a bit for a while. And just get on with the job, because he's doing a great job in that car and he doesn't want things to be disrupted, doesn't want the team to be shaken up, doesn't want anything to go wrong. So the best thing to do is not to have people sort of punching each other in the back of the garage. Which is, it's not quite got that bad yet, but it's effectively that sort of level of, when you're getting up and making public statements about how the team boss should be fired, that's not entirely the smartest thing.
It's not useful, is it? Okay, I'm going to give you Red Bull, the whole group, Joe. You're now in charge. You're a race fan, so you want it to continue. But Horner and the Verstappens don't get along. Up to you. Quick decision, Joe. Who are you keeping? Who are you getting rid of?
Well, you get rid of Verstappen. Because it's Team Horner.
Yeah.
Even if he's the best driver in the world, if you want to destroy the team, you get rid of the team boss who's built it. I mean, I'm not saying one of these team bosses, one of the football manager team bosses who's been there for 10 minutes. I'm talking about a guy who's been there for 15 years.
I'm with you.
And, the idea that some Austrian can parachute in and run Milton Keynes is just madness. It's just insanity. So if you're trying to protect your investment over all these years and make sure the team keeps on doing what it's doing, you don't change the team. You change the driver.
It's very much like the panelists I have on Missed Apex. Yes, people get very fond of the individual panelists, but they're all entirely replaceable, like light bulbs. I can just take one in and chuck another one out. Oh, it's an early race. Bring the Aussies in. Chuck the Americans out. Oh, by the way, people who listen to our Australian Grand Prix race review, it's going to be about 9 a.m. UK time. And I know it doesn't affect you because you're there, Joe, but it's a bit earlier this year. It's 4 a.m. start in the UK, which is, it's a little emotional for me.
Well, it's just, unfortunately, there's this thing called the globe. And if we go racing on the other side of it.
It's always been a 6 a.m. sort of race.
Yeah, but that was... I think they're also taking into account nowadays the American audience, which is growing fast. And so you've got to look at the time zones of where... I mean, the thing is, you're trying to please the audience everywhere in the
US
world,
as well.
And you can't.
It's the Americans.
You can't. Well, but which is, we had a Las Vegas race on a Saturday night that kind of worked for Europeans.
It did, yeah.
Worked in Asia and it worked in America. So that was about as near as you can get, but it was a Saturday night race at silly hours of the day and night. If you were there in Vegas, you didn't get a lot of sleep. And it was a kind of weird thing to be doing. But that's just, and we're going through a situation. I mean, I never thought we'd ever get any racing on the west coast of the US in Formula One, simply because it just doesn't work. But there's now, as F1 gets bigger in the US, it might start to work. So,
Yeah, Brad D's got a suggestion for Red Bull that maybe they can leave Joss at a gas station. Very naughty. That's a naughty comment.
That is very, very droll. Yes.
Okay, well, so I guess we're on a waiting brief now. Are we expecting anything to move soon in the Red Bull situation? Is there another dossier about to be dumped?
Who knows? No. I think that the people who are trying to get rid of Christian Horner threw everything they had at it. And I'll tell you one other thing, and that is that if the KC's report had got anything bad in it, we would have had that by now. Because basically, you know, they threw everything apart.
That's the best that they had.
Yeah, and that's the best they had. So if that's the best they had, well, not good enough. Next.
Well, let's be clear, and I don't want to get into a debate about it, not good enough to achieve their aims of removing Christian Horner. So they've taken a swing at the king and found themselves now they must kneel at the sword and go and find another.
Well, I would phrase it slightly differently, in as much as the axe has swung one way, and you know, when you hang an axe from the ceiling, it always comes back the other way, and who it hits on the way through the second time, we don't know. But I have a vague suspicion it might hit a few people.
All right, there you go. A waiting brief on Red Bull as we now go to the tracks of tomorrow. So, those Saudi Arabians.
We're not doing Mohammed bin Sulayem.
Yeah, well, I was going to take a break from shocking things.
Yeah, let's do the tracks of tomorrow. Good idea, yeah.
So there was the announcement of the new Saudi Arabian track and what looked like AI-generated overhanging tracks, and it very much looked like the Willy Wonka scandal that we've had in the UK, where expectations were not met. Has that completely passed you by, Joe?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, after this, I'm going to send you minutes and minutes of WhatsApp voice notes to catch you up on it. But yeah, so they've released this track that looks almost unreal. It looks Mario Kart. It looks, you know, like it's got a dangerous overhang, a hairpin levitating in midair. And I said, you can't have a hairpin in midair. And you said to me that they are genuinely planning to do that.
Yes, they are. So I believe. I mean, I actually haven't seen the plans, but I've heard about them. And yes, I am told they are planning to do a hairpin in midair with runoff area as well. So,
okay.
You know, but all this is well and good. It's all fine. They haven't built a thing yet.
So definite is it?
Last week, they awarded the contract for the construction of the racetrack. Now, that presumably means that they have finished a design, so therefore there's something to put out, but they haven't begun any work. So we're not going to Qiddiya before 28 or 29 at the very earliest. Because the other thing is, why would anybody, Formula One or Saudi Arabia, want us to go racing in a large building site? It doesn't have a good look. What they want is a finished mega city so everyone can go, gee whiz, isn't this wonderful? Look at all these fountains, et cetera, where the camels can go and drink and all this, whatever. You know, you want it all finished. So there's no point in going there, which is why in Jeddah, they've just spent a fortune fixing all the buildings from being temporary to permanent, and which, you know, they are also planning changes in Jeddah. I don't think that Jeddah will just hand over to Qiddiya. I think that they will want two Grand Prix towards the end of the decade. And I think that they have the financial muscle to do that because they can pay whatever they want for a Grand Prix, and F1 is not going to say no. The other option is, of course, that F1 might be owned by the Saudis by that point, in which case they'll definitely have to.
This is what I was going to ask, Joe, because you know, people complain about the US having too many tracks, but the size and the number of fans there seems to justify it. But you can't say the same of Saudi Arabia, that the thirst for F1 there demands two Grand Prix tracks.
No, but the money does.
So they're just like, well, that's what we want. So is there like a motivated individual who just loves F1?
I don't know if it's a love of F1. I think it's to do with a love of using sport to make the world like them.
Right.
Which we are seeing in football, we're seeing it in golf, we're seeing it in every kind of sport where you can spend lots of money.
Sports washing.
Well, it's not necessarily sports washing, because sports washing is a two-way thing. What it is, it draws your attention. Sport draws attention to a country. And while there may be attempts to make the country look better using the event also has to, the country has to improve itself because people come and look at it and go, well, actually, this isn't right. And if you look at what happened in Doha for the World Cup, there were an awful lot of things that changed. So it wasn't sport washing. What it was is actually social change brought about by sport. So, you know, it's easy to be the Western liberal and shout about sport washing.
Okay.
Particularly those who don't go there.
I'm finding
find
it,
out what it's like.
Yeah, I'm finding it very easy. You're right. I am finding it incredibly easy.
No, but I'm not talking
that.
About you. I'm talking about it's amazing how many people have a view about the places and never go to them and see what they're really like. Because there is no replacement for going to see a place and seeing how it is. Now, you've got to be aware of the fact they might be extra nice to you and take you to all the nice places. But, you know, some of us are actually smart enough to be able to see through that. So,
well, I do always say, and I am consistent, that I am bribable. So, you know,
you may be Spanners, but I am not.
Oh, I really am.
Well, I mean, listen, we all have a price, but my price is retirement price.
Oh, know? No. Mine's so low.
I go away forever.
Mine's so low. Get me into the paddock for a Grand Prix weekend, into your paddock club. And suddenly, if I start going, do you know what? Actually, yeah, I think, Logan Sargeant's real decent driver. Then you'll know that I've been in the Williams hospitality all weekend. There'll be signs.
No, why do you think they'd be saying that in the Williams Hospitality these days?
No, I'm just saying I would just change my mind. I'm very my price is super low. In fact, just get me through the gates and I'll say whatever. And that applies to nation states and Grand Prix as well. So just send the gift.
Well, anyway,
basket.
Let's go back to the racing circuits.
No, send me stuff.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I think, actually, I did have a conversation with the local president of the local automobile club about having two Grand Prix. And I said, well, you can have that if it's going to cost you a lot of money. And he said, no, we want a discount. I just laughed at him and said, well, good luck with that from Formula One, getting a discount for two races. I don't think that's going to happen. But there is always the potential, as mentioned, that, you know, Saudi could actually decide one day to buy the commercial rights to Formula One. There's nothing to stop that happening if the price is right. Now, it's not going to happen anytime soon.
What soon?
And all that. Well, I don't know. I doubt it'll happen in the next 5 years because we've got to get through the current negotiations for commercial deals. We've got to get through the start of the new regulations, and we have to work out who the hell's running the FIA and. If indeed the FIA is running anything. And there's lots of things that need to be sorted out. But the other thing that is very key in all of this is the fact that Liberty Media is not going to sell the Formula One company because it's complicated financial business. But basically, it's a C-Corp, and the tax basis on which it is built is totally ridiculous to sell. You have to change the corporate classification to make it sensible for selling. And Greg Maffei, of CEO of Liberty Media, has said as much. So if you start seeing Liberty Media spinning off other elements in Liberty Media, i.e. Sirius XM Radio or I think there's one called Liberty Live as well.
They're
if they start spinning off that and leave Formula One on its own, then you can say that's the time they're going to start selling, because then they can change the classification and make it tax efficient. And you know, tax efficient is huge amounts of money. You're talking with a company like this. Anyway, I think there's a lot more growth potential in Formula One yet. And I think that, you know, a little while ago, somebody said that they thought 20 billion was too much. I think it's about half what it's going to be worth one day soon.
That's interesting. Well, obviously, you know a lot about being tax efficient, Joe, because for your GP Plus magazine, he only accepts hand-delivered cash payments. So you have to pay in cash, don't you, for GP Plus
Next
magazine.
Person.
So you can subscribe online by going and searching for GP Plus Joe Saywood.
Yeah, you can. There you go. Yeah. And for the JSBM newsletter as well.
I was trying to feed in a link to Joe's stuff. So Joe does a regular After the Race GP Plus magazine, which is a PDF, which you've very kindly gifted me, and I very much enjoy reading that on a Monday. And you can just buy the whole year's subscription for, I think it's a steal if you like that kind of thing. You should do like a sample, Joe.
And then also there's the JSBM newsletter, which is the really good stuff, the insider information.
Yeah.
The industry buys. If you go to the page, you'll see some recommendations which are quite spectacular, including one from Spanners.
Yay.
I was feeling charitable at the time.
He threw me
there,
a bone and let me.
It was the
do
other
one.
Lot. The other people were much more impressive than you. So.
Yeah. Aww, now I feel bad. Now I want to change the nice things I said to horrible things. Yeah, but go and check that out. We always put the links to Joe's stuff in the show notes. There's a live audience in Australia. Is that sold out, Joe?
I don't know. I haven't looked, actually. But I think there's a few seats left.
And we're trying to do a virtual live audience because people have enjoyed those. We've not had one for a while, but maybe after Japan, we're going to try and
actually,
hook something up.
That rat, Gunter Steiner, he's going to be in Melbourne. And I've discovered that he's having two events for fans, not on the same day as me, thank goodness. But it costs a vast amount of money to go and hear Gunter Steiner speaking.
Yeah.
Which is, as far as I'm concerned, it's completely incomprehensible to spend that much money to listen to Steiner. But, you know, whatever. He's a star these days.
How much to go and see Steiner?
I have invited Steiner to come to my do. I don't think he'll turn up necessarily. But we are trying to get together in Melbourne for a bit of fun.
Good.
And as you'll see, if you watch the Drive to Survive this year, Steiner and I are used to having fun together because I think it begins the opening sequences of him telling me to
go away.
Bleep.
You don't seem like friends at all in that.
No, we are very much on friendly terms. And if you watch, I think it's episode 4, you get the full sequence where it is me taking the piss out of him and him responding to it, which is, you know, I think I said something like, how the hell did you manage to qualify this high up the grid? And he said, I don't know. And then I said, well, it doesn't matter. You'll mess it up on race day anyway.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for changing the word.
That's when he told me to. The trouble with these Netflix cameras is that they're everywhere. And the other day I was having a conversation on the grid around the pole car, actually, with somebody who's quite well connected with the pole car team. And we're in the middle of a deeded conversation about a subject, and suddenly we're aware of a Netflix microphone above our heads, whereupon said person, who looked an awful lot like Christian Horner, said a rude word just to make sure that would not be included in the Netflix.
Well, it doesn't seem to stop them, does it?
It doesn't seem to stop them, but, you know, it is sometimes a little, I mean, people say it's all scripted. Believe me, it's not, because you just don't know where they're going to pop up next. So you do have to be careful. And sometimes people are wired. They have the microphones on if they're the subject for the week. And, you know, I've had conversations where can't talk. Now I'm wired.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's a fun one. Hey, well, we're still talking about events, so you can, if you're in Melbourne, do go and check out the evenings with Joe. They're very chilled, very relaxed, and some great information there. Thank you for the people who've got in touch with me about Miami. We've had a couple of dozen people get in touch to say they would come to some kind of Missed Apex event if we were there, if we were to hold one. So I'm talking to conference centres now, and there may be a small cover, but keep those emails coming in with the subject line Miami to spanners@missedapex.net, because every single email that comes in like that is further encouragement to go ahead and start, you know, writing checks and making plans and booking things. All right, let's move on to less happy things, less happy times. So there was accusations from an alleged whistleblower that Mohamed Ben Salayem allegedly tried to interfere to get a Fernando Alonso's penalty allegedly removed.
Got enough allegedlies in that sentence? Let me help you out here. There is a whistleblower who has made allegations about the FIA.
It is our understanding that.
He has made a number of allegations, if indeed it is a he. And there are basically, there's a whole bunch of, I described it the other day, I was trying to work a way of saying it. Mohamed Bin Sulaym is like a battleship, and there is an entire fleet of submarines coming at him right now from different directions, which looks an awful lot like a concerted attack on him because of all the things that have gone wrong during his presidency. And if you say, everyone will go, oh, well, of course, that's F1 going after him. I don't think it is. I think it's the FIA itself going after him.
Member clubs,
because they understand that their income comes from Formula One, and if he messes it up, they go bust. So I think it's far more likely. F1 is, it's much in their interest to stand back and just say, hey, nothing to do with us, let him go. But I think that's what we're seeing now, and I think we'll see more. I don't think we've even seen the beginning of it, the end of it yet. I think also, bear in mind, there are the Toto and Susie Wolf have said that they are looking at legal action against the FIA president for things he did in December with regard to allegations about them. And I just think the whole thing's a big mess. And what happens at the end of the day, I don't know. It may not be enough because the FIA is a system that is run on patronage, and therefore you can get people to vote for you. And let us not forget that Max Mosley was on the front page of newspapers in England, red top newspapers, in a sadomasochistic orgy, and he was not removed with a vote of confidence at the FIA. So that tells you what you can get away with if you're the FIA president and you wield the patronage power that the auto clubs. You know, the question really is from the Formula One point of view is, do we actually want to be associated with the FIA anymore? And that's what this is about. This is about the people going, we actually do want to be. We don't want to try and push them around. We don't want to be going to Turkey and meeting with the president and saying to the world, we'll have another Grand Prix. We could have another Grand Prix. When we all know there's not going to be another Turkish Grand Prix because the government won't pay for it, and saying that there could be one, it's not the FIA's choice anyway. It's F1 who make the decisions. So he's going around trying to appear powerful, trying to appear to be the guy who's moving and shaking, when in fact, the FIA is little more than a service provider these days to F1. Now it's a question of whether F1 wants to change the service provider or find somebody running it who is more akin with what they need. So, you know, in Canada last year, the NFL commissioner came to visit F1, which I thought was quite interesting. Why is the NFL commissioner there? I think it wasn't him. He'd like to have a look and see what F1's all about because it's invading his country. But it might also have been about the F1 people talking about the commissioner and how he operates and how NFL operates their governance system, because he's obviously appointed by them, not some motor club in the middle of Africa. So, you know, it's an interesting time we're living in. But I think that the current FIA president hasn't understood all the implications of everything he does.
Okay.
Allegedly.
See, but the thing is, as a fan, the allegations, if true, to me are super, super concerning, because that boils down to the soul of the sport. Like, that is really upsetting. If fans were to discover that was proven.
Hang on. That's one of the allegations. The other allegation is that in Las Vegas, they tried to stop the licensing of the circuit. So, you know, these are things that are allegations. So you can't say it definitely happened. It definitely didn't happen.
What do you reckon, though? No, don't answer that.
No. Better not go there on that one.
Yeah.
But the fact is that somebody somewhere who has a reason to do it and believes it to be true, I don't think that a whistleblower is just going to make stuff up. Whistleblowers generally don't make stuff up. They usually want the true stuff to come out. Now, we don't know the answer to that. In the question of Alonso and influence and da-di-da-di-da, there is a clear... I don't know if you remember what happened in Jeddah.
Yeah, he got a couple of penalties, didn't he? So he got an early penalty and then served the penalty incorrectly.
Well, he served the penalty, and there was the argument about whether if a jack touches the car, that is the same. Now, apparently they'd had a meeting and agreed that anything touching the car was the equivalent to working on it. So if you touch it with a jack, that was working on the car. There was an agreement. And the stewards were told there is an agreement, you can't work on the car. So they penalized him at the end of the race. And then Aston Martin chose to protest, arguing that there was no agreement, which is odd because everyone else in the room at that particular time in the sporting, whatever it is, group, can't remember the official title of it, thought there was. And Aston Martin said, no, there wasn't, because it's not in the minutes and there is no piece of paper. Now, that may be a little bit disingenuous in as much as everybody else in the room knew there was an agreement. But as they say in Hollywood, a verbal agreement's not worth the paper it's written on. But that was how Formula One used to be run in the days of Charlie. Everyone agreed to do something and then they did it. Now, if they don't do it like that, okay, now it's different. Everything's written down, signed off, rubber stamped, whatever. But, and that is as a result of what happened there, where an agreement was not, because it served their purposes at any given time, an agreement was ignored. And, you know, so there is a point there as to at what point did anyone get in, you know, involved in all that. And there was some kind of intervention. Because the local vice president of the FIA for the Middle East did get involved. As to what he did and what was said and how much of it comes down from the FIA president, we'll have to wait and see. But there is clearly somebody who thinks it's wrong. And can they prove it? Probably not. So that may not end up being a huge thing. The Las Vegas thing, can you prove it? Probably not. I mean, the thing is, what do you need for proof? And the other thing is, you know, the FIA has all these fancy ethics committees and compliance officers and all the rest of it. Well, the compliance officer can be fired by the FIA president, so that's not a good start, is it? The ethics committee, they had a meeting not long ago, 18 months ago, where one of them actually resigned. One of the major people on the committee resigned because he didn't agree with the decision. So, you know, who knows?
So there's a couple... sorry, Joe.
Yeah, it's basically, there's a lot of politics going on, and it's not necessarily specifically about the individual issues. It's about the whole situation in the relationship of the FIA to itself, if you like.
Okay. I have the perception, so I was not surprised by that allegation at all. I have the perception that the FIA president treats different people differently and different teams differently. I have no confidence in the
you
way.
You should say allegedly several times.
No, hang on, that's my opinion, isn't it? Isn't it my opinion? I'm allowed an opinion. When I look at the things that the FIA has acted on very fiercely and the things that they have let go, and then you hear reports like this that only confirm in my head, if true, would confirm the thinking I've had, because there's been loads of decisions where you go, well, where has that come from? Why have they done that? And there's been some bizarre decisions. So for me as a fan, I want to get to the bottom of, is he actually interfering with decisions?
Well, in an article in Grand Prix Plus last week, I went through the whole presidency and all the decisions that were controversial. Oh. And there's so many of them. And there's such a lot of stuff. And I don't think I reached very many conclusions. That's not the point I was trying to achieve. What I was achieving was to point out just what's happened in the last 2 years. And that goes right back to the very beginning about, you know, the fallout from Abu Dhabi 21 onwards. And so we'll see how it all turns up. But this is not about specific issues. This is about the FIA, I believe anyway, about the FIA going, do we really want this president?
That's interesting. That's probably as interesting as the case itself. Which edition of Grand Prix Plus magazine did you say that was in?
The last one, which was from Jeddah.
Okay, good. Right.
But you have to buy, you can buy individual
editions. You can now. Oh, that didn't
used
to be
well
the case.
You might as well buy the whole lot, because, you know.
Yeah, you might as well. And buy some Missed Apex merch while you're at it. Wrong, but first. Hey, Joe, I was going to send you some Missed Apex merch, but as a leading journalist, wrong, but first. Is probably don't want to wear
a wrong but first hoodie. You know,
we could have a Missed the Apex.
You could send
one.
That. I can think of a couple of publications you could send that to.
Okay. So if you listen to Tuesday's episode, you are going to see my cunning plan to try and get somebody on camera at a race this season with "Oh no, you missed the Apex" merch on, saying "Oh no, you missed the Apex" on a broadcast. I have that. The plan is in motion, Joe. But that's a happy thing, and we can't spend too much time being happy. So let's talk about Alpine. So poor Anthony Joshua, just buzzing fresh off of his fierce victory against Ngannou, appears in the F1 paddock and gets asked by Skyler, who are you here with? And he's obviously, you can tell, like, he knows what's going on in Formula One. He paused. It's almost like he didn't want to say, I'm here with Alpine.
Well, he's a shareholder.
I know, but in the moment, you could almost hear him hesitate. And he's like, I know it's not going well, but it's really not going well.
I mean, look on the bright side. He's only got a very small percentage. The man who owns the whole thing, which is the boss of Renault, was there too. And he wasn't happy, believe me. But, you know. There is an old saying in Formula One, which is never let car companies run their racing teams because they mess it up.
That's a saying.
I think that is exactly what's been going on here. He's been clearing out all kinds of people who know what racing's about and putting in people who are not necessarily as experienced in the ways of Formula One. And that, I'm afraid, has led to more people leaving. And it's just a bit of a mess at the moment. It doesn't mean it's a terminal mess, but... you know, they had this sort of 100 races thing.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Set fire to that idea.
Yeah.
Put that particular piece of paper through the shredder along with the person who wrote it.
Well, it resets though, doesn't it? It's 100 races from now.
Yeah. Well, 100 races from now, that can be forever, can't it? So they need some serious reflection on what to do there. And, I put it this way, you can sell the racing team for a vast amount of money at the moment. You can hold on to the engines, you know, because that's quite a useful thing. In fact, Renault have done that before. You know, remember that after another little kerfuffle back in Singapore in 2008, Renault dumped their own team and became an engine supplier for Red Bull and won a bunch of world championships because they let somebody else run the racing team. So, that's really the way that might be the best way of doing it, because you have a French organization and an English organization, which are not gelling together. I don't know. We'll see what they do. But you've also got a whole bunch of people wanting to buy F1 teams, including a Mr. Andretti. You know, there's a whole bunch of people out there wanting to buy F1 teams. Yeah. So you can actually make a lot of money, and you can use that money to invest in the other half of the business and make it better.
I have limited experience with Anglo-Franc engineering, collaborations. But in the defence project I was in, the French side just hated us, just openly hated us. But I've heard that Viry and Enstone don't seem to get on very well, the engine part race team.
Just remember the nations did spend 100 years fighting each other some years ago.
You could, I think I,
you know, Joe. Speaking as somebody who is integrated into the other side, if you like, having been resident in this particular country for 30 years,
you've married in.
So I have an understanding of the way things are, perhaps a little bit more than people sitting on the island. And you know, I think there's pluses and minuses on both sides. The thing is that the two pluses and two minuses reject one another, don't they? So
yeah, I've heard a theory.
Is that right?
That
I'm not good at physics.
I've heard a theory that the Anglo-French war is really only in a lull, so it's only really a ceasefire.
Well, it does get very confusing if you're a student of history, because half of them were half French anyway, you know. So
that's true.
And Richard Coeur de Lion, I'm not sure he spoke English at all, to be honest.
No, the nobility spoke French for a long time in England.
Indeed, and still do, I say.
There we go. Yeah, but still, you know, this is the problem. They don't have a word for entrepreneur. So that's maybe why it's not pushing
that is their word.
Forward. That's the joke, Joe.
Oh, sorry.
I want to ask you two more things before we let you go. Firstly, have you seen the Ferrari movie?
Yes, I have.
With Darth Vader in it, the new Darth Vader, Adam Driver, the really tall guy. What did you think of it? Did you find that interesting?
It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah. In fact,
I actually thought it wasn't too bad. I mean, of course, it mangled up history and it put things into the order it wanted. But at the end of the day, it was one of the accidents was completely absurd. The other one was actually extraordinarily good in terms of not being over the top. And I think that as a whole, is it going to do any harm to Formula One? No. Does it tell the truth? No, but it gives you an idea about what old man Ferrari was like. Was it entertaining? Yeah, it was okay. So
is it
a good thing? On balance, it's 60% okay. And
it was fine, wasn't it?
It was okay.
I would say if you're going to enjoy it, I would want to go in with this knowledge, which is that the first crash that happens early on is so appallingly done that I nearly switched off.
Yeah, no, that was my view as well. It was just too much.
So know that, and then you can ignore it.
The second one was brutal and realistic.
Yeah, it was much more cinematic. But yeah, yeah. In fact, there may be a clip in the Patreon Slack group if we scroll up far enough. And it's just, it had people howling in laughter around me. It was interesting because it's a yarn. It's not like the Le Mans movie or, you know, it's not like a high octane thing. They could almost have taken the racing out of it.
It's not a documentary, is it? It's a creation, but it's based on fact.
I didn't realise that that's how early the Fiat and Ferrari merged in that time. I didn't realise that the relationship was as old as that.
Well, they were talking at that point, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. All right, and then speaking of car manufacturers coming into F1 then, the last thing I'm interested in has been this move, which I have been largely poo-pooing, which is Audi buying Sauber. And they seem to, on the surface, have shown a massive commitment by now committing to buying 100% of the race team. Is this a sign that they're taking it seriously?
Of course it is. And they have always taken it seriously because when the board decides to do something, they do it. You don't just change their mind 10 minutes later because it's not quite what they want.
Well,
what they
felt
did
like
was
that.
What they did was that at the time they wanted to buy, the only option for buying was not the perfect option. However, it became the perfect option because they needed to get on with changing the team. And the team owner, who'd agreed this original deal, realized that he could make some more money by selling all of it earlier, because they'd obviously have to up the price to get him to do that. And also the reason that they couldn't do it originally was probably Ferrari not wanting to supply engines to Audi. And the man who was in charge of Ferrari at that point is not there anymore. And the guy who is in charge of Ferrari, guess what? Used to work for Sauber.
It's all just a spider's web, all crawling over each other. But so is it going to be an Audi engine then? Are they going to come in with an Audi engine?
It'll be an Audi engine in 28. They'll still have to... It won't be called Audi until... Sorry, 26. It won't be called Audi until 26. It will be called Stake, whatever that is.
For the next 2 years.
Through the heart. Yeah, it will be called that for the next 2 years because you can't have an Audi Ferrari. I mean, you might be able to have an Aston Martin Honda in the future, but I doubt that'll actually be what happens.
So this is the same reasoning that you couldn't have a Andretti Renault, I guess. People wanted them to have
their
own.
Well, you could
engine.
Have an Andretti Renault until 28 when Cadillac comes in, yeah.
But the big argument was if you don't come in with your own engine, you're not adding anything to the sport, was Horner's words.
Well, that's way too complicated a subject to get into. But fundamentally, Andretti could buy the Alpine Formula One team and could be supplied with Renault engines now, which would get them in and up and running and would get them to 28 when Cadillac is ready to come in. That's now a possibility. If they don't do that, there you go.
Well,
but can't say the opportunity doesn't exist because they need to get on the phone and say to Luca Di Meo, how much do you want me to take this mess off your hands?
Joe called Alpine a mess. That was him, not me. But they certainly do
have...
Well,
it is a mess, isn't it? And where are they?
Well, they have a mountain to climb,
Joe. They're behind Haas at the moment, so...
Excellent. Joe, looks like the French internet is conspiring against us now. They've heard our chat and they're pulling the plug. No Alpine slander will be tolerated by the French internet providers. But go and click the links below and set you up with Joe's stuff. I think the gateway drug to the Joe Saywood stuff is the green notebook that comes out after every race. And that's a good one even to find on a Tuesday or Wednesday after the race. Sit, settle down. And it's a make a cup of coffee blog rather than a in your face, wrong but first article. It's proper writing, Joe.
It's very, very thoughtful is the word you're looking for.
You could write a book.
I could. Yeah, again.
We haven't advertised those for a while, but if you want to advertise your toilet books, you can. Joe wrote some toilet books.
Just look at it on the internet. It's all out there.
Fascinating F1 facts. Anyway.
Volumes 1-4. And if you want a really good story, you can get the Grand Prix Saboteurs, which is just amazing.
Well, even if he says so himself. Thank you very much, Joe Saywood. Go and follow him at Joe Saywood on Twitter. Follow me at Spanners Ready. I'm still the best one, even when Joe's here. We will see you on Saturday. I think we're going to live stream Saturday, and that's not because we're sticking with the Saturday format. It just so happens that we can get Alex Brundle to jump on and do some F1 news with us, so we thought we'd grab that opportunity. Until we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.